welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is the March 5th episode. It is also episode 1. We hope the curious listeners share your ideas, constructive feedback, and criticism at our email address, podcasts@anarchistnews.org. If you want to get more involved, you can find this podcast at podcast.anarchistnews.org and most of the citations at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. On our minds this weekend. This podcast is based in the East Bay of the broader Bay Area, which means we have a broad and energetic anarchist scene that mostly despises one another. This weekend, our thoughts are with the anarchist people who are going to confront the March for Trump and the so-called Proud Boys demo that's happening in Berkeley, California. Most people are comparing this event to the Milo event that happened at the UC Berkeley about a month ago. We hope everyone stays safe and free. I just came back from seeing the movie La La Land, and it reminded me of a number of things that are worth repeating. The musical is the most approachable of movie forms because it involves music as a central character and usually tells the universal story of love. This movie spoke to me, as it will probably speak to most of you, as the story that love feels pretty darn good, especially in the beginning, when love is full of hope and potential, versus a love 10 years later, which, while fine, is not so generalizable. It's not for everyone. It's something specific between the two of you. Love 10 years in is more about whether you're, in fact, happy with the things you've built. Are you happy with kids, mortgage, and the 30 more years ahead than you were of the 10 years behind? This pertains to anarchy and anarchism because this world of music, love, and barely recognizable unreality is the same as the world of the movie musical. Anarchy is a beautiful idea because it does not necessarily concern itself with the mundane facts of a future economic order. It doesn't have to concern itself with traffic jams and the price of milk because it does concern itself with a world that we have to create to experience. It's autonomous, which means that terms like ought, supposed to, and you need to do not exist. Anarchism is about conceiving of exactly those things you and your people want to concern themselves with, and nothing else. Speaking for this podcast, we will concern ourselves with Anarchy Land, a world where we and our friends do matter, where imagination counts for more than politics, history, or guilt, a world where we engage in this world of capitalism, the state, and white supremacy with hostility or not at all. And because we care for each other, we tend to prefer less engagement with the things we hate rather than more. The content of the podcast will reflect these biases. Onward to this week in anarchist news. What's new this week? CrimeThink successfully completed their second Kickstarter. Embracing the 21st century model of publishing, they have completed another Kickstarter for two new books. The first book is called From Democracy to Freedom, exploring how recent uprisings have been catalyzed and limited by democratic discourse. From Democracy to Freedom explores the difference between government and self-determination, proposing new ways to understand what we're doing when we make decisions together. The second book is called No Wall They Can Build. It scrutinizes the borders that control movement around North America, drawing on nearly a decade of solidarity work in the desert between Mexico and Arizona. The authors uncover the real goals and costs of U.S. border policy, who benefits from it, and what it will take to change it. From their Kickstarter, thanks to you who successfully funded our next two books, Know All They Can Build and From Democracy to Freedom. Altogether, you pledged more than $17,000. Over 600 print copies of each of the print books are already spoken for. We are eager to get these out into the world and grateful for your assistance. In addition to the books, we'll be printing tens of thousands of our new full-color poster, Borders, the Global Caste System. You can see the front of the poster. We'll publish the complete design shortly. We hope to see those adorn the walls everywhere that people are indoctrinated with racist propaganda about immigration, while families are torn apart by deportation. There's also an interesting news story comes out of Austria. Hundreds of residents declare themselves state deniers. A new movement of state deniers has sprung up in Austria, where hundreds of people are refusing to accept the authorities of the state or any punitive measures handed down by the state officials. Hundreds of Austrians have declared themselves state deniers and don't accept the legitimacy of the Republic of Austria. They don't recognize the authority of state organs, refuse to pay taxes or fines, and instead of contributing to public coffers, they claim compensation from civil servants and government institutions. It's particularly strong in Lower Austria, the northernmost and most populous of the country's nine states. It's been gathering pace since 2014. The Austrian civil servants are describing it as quote-unquote paper terrorism, and here's a quote from them. We're talking about paper terrorism, in which authorities are threatened when they carry out legal proceedings. Mayors are threatened. Tax agency burdens are threatened. As are banks when they give these people a notice of charges. Roland, director of Lower Austria State Office for Constitutional Protection, told media sources. Upcoming events. There has been a posted invitation to the NYC Anarchist Book Fair. It's the 11th annual New York City Anarchist Book Fair will take place on Saturday, May 13th at the Judson Memorial Church in Manhattan. There's also an announcement this week that the Orange County Anarchist Book Fair is happening on March 25th at the Universalist Unitarian Church in Anaheim, California. I'm going to read a little bit from their blurb. Become ungovernable, the third annual OC Anarchist Book Fair. Whoever is in the White House, become ungovernable. Join us for the annual installment of the OC Anarchist Book Fair, a free grassroots event that's setting up in Anaheim for the first time. We will have workshops, panel discussions, musicians, poets, and featured speakers throughout the day. Find your favorite book vendors, tabling organizations, and zines in the parking lot. Childcare will be provided as always. Keep posted for more event updates as they come, and please consider donating to our organizing funds. Publications, podcasts, and more. This week, we saw two new posts come out of the Black and Green Review number 4. That's Black and Green Publications, the two articles that came out. Do Humans Deserve to Survive? By Kevin Tucker. And Fear Factor by Sky Hyatt. This week, the Anarchy Radio podcast, which is a weekly ongoing radio show converted to a podcast by John Zerzan, came out. This is a great place to hear the latest in anarchist gossip and New York Times reprints. This week, John discovered that dialogue on the internet is often inconsiderate and toxic. Anarchistnews.org, of course, was used as the primary example. Analysis. While it is generally true that a lot of what anarchists spend their time doing is analyzing the society that we live in, and of course Anarchist News spends a lot of time posting, and a lot of conversations are about the posts that are about analysis. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to differentiate between analysis articles that we're going to point out and highlight for you to go and look at on your own, and then a couple articles that we're going to talk about a bit more in context, and we're going to read some passages from and sort of consider. The articles that are analysis articles that came out this week that are absolutely worth checking out. There's a brand new article that comes from a site called The Conjure Palace or something like that. It's called It's Time for Anarchists to Pick Up a Gun, that basically talks about the anarchist association with liberalism and obviously guns. There was a very interesting article, not exactly an anarchist one. The article's name is The Will to Intervene. It probably is the final chapter from a brand new, just announced book called Subversion in Capitalist America, A User's Manual. My suspicion is that the author is a sort of known cantankerous anti-state communist here in the Bay Area. The article is worth looking at because it does actually hold some useful nuggets for talking about the shape and form of struggle in 2017 and in the past few decades. There's a couple interesting analysis articles that come out of the Vice properties. And, you know, it's always interesting when Vice magazine looks at anarchism, it's unclear whether we should take it as a compliment or a hostile assault. The first one is Vice's property, Noisy, did a video interview and sort of life in the times of Penny Rumbald, who's one of the founders of Crass, which is one of the original punk groups from the 70s. And Penny is still living a life sort of reflected in the values that came out of Crass: vegetarianism, pacifism, and anarchism. So the name of the story is Anarchy and Peace with Penny Rimbault from Crass. The name of the video, short video, is called Get Out of Your Own Way. The second article, and this is sort of a, I guess we'd call it a piece of solid cultural reporting. It actually doesn't have any snark in it at all. It's a solid piece, first-person story of someone entering into the squat scene in Barcelona and talking specifically about a gender-segregated, non-man squat. And it's called Inside the Radical Squat, Pushing for Gender Equality in the Anarchist Movement. It's very inside baseball, and it's sort of a surprisingly positive piece. And it's from the Vice property. Didn't write it down here, but it's, I think, broadly. So we're going to talk about a couple articles in depth, and this is mostly because they bring up some very interesting issues, I think things worth talking about, and I'm going to try to just read the sort of best pieces of these pieces, of these essays, rather than necessarily editorializing that much, but enjoy. The first article we're going to talk about is Black Bloc a racist tactic in the Trump era? So there's the context that this article comes out of is the fact that, you know, especially in the academy, but more broadly, there is a tension that is bubbling between what we would call the identity politics, radical perspective of people of color, and an anarchism that wants to engage on the streets with the state. So here we go. Why activists should stop wearing masks. While I understand that the Black Bloc is a tactic that sometimes is needed and even helpful in protest to protect and defend against imminent threats of violence, I disagree that power is faceless and that white people wearing masks brings unity. Power in the United States is rooted in privilege, and by wearing masks, white protesters are potentially failing to acknowledge their privilege as white people in this society. Moreover, by wearing masks in a Black Bloc in the Trump era, white activists are also failing to comprehend the impact their actions might have on communities of color, immigrant communities, Muslim communities, and other targeted communities in the U.S. They give a list of their criticisms. Number one, the legacy of white people in masks in the United States is one of oppression and violence against communities of color in the United States. When I see white people in masks at protests, by the way, it's worth mentioning that the author, whose name is Nico Quintana, is a transgender Latin activist, and that's Latinx, a Latina activist, and law student. Okay. When I see white people in masks at protests, I'm reminded of extremist white supremacy groups, police with riot gear, and the symbolic mask of white privilege that is accustomed to anonymity and reduced accountability. White activists should consider what movements they are mirroring when they wear masks at protests, including movements such as the KKK. Point two, wearing a mask may prevent building trust, showing solidarity, and fostering community with targeted communities. Wearing masks may symbolically convey that, quote, I will show up, but only if I can't be recognized, end quote. If you can't be recognized, how can people hold you accountable for your actions or ask you to show up in earnest? People with privilege have access to institutions and privileges that other people do not have. By wearing a mask, consider the message conveyed regarding how the person is willing to support targeted communities. Are they signaling their support movements by and for targeted communities, or are they saying they will only show up if they won't get targeted? Are they saying, through their masks, we won't be in solidarity with you if we have to put our privileges in jeopardy? Point three, masks. A mask is not protection against persecution. Institutional privilege is. If you are white, covering your face for anything other than religious purposes or for immediate protection from tear gas or pepper spray may send a message that you are in fact not in solidarity with communities targeted by racism, anti-immigration prejudice, Islamophobia, and transphobia. Please do not be afraid to fully show up in solidarity and support communities fighting for equity and justice. Please take off the masks. So, I think that is a challenging position, and requires a sort of more serious hearing than it was given in the comments section of this particular article. But it is worth taking a look at. Is Black Bloc a racist tactic in the Trump era? The next story we're going to talk about a little bit more in detail is basically it's a story about anarchists, but it is written by the enemy of anarchists. It's written for an organization called Stratfor, which bills itself as a geopolitical intelligence consulting firm. What's interesting about Stratfor is that they were hacked, ostensibly connected, I think, to the Jeremy Hammond case. So they've been hacked by anarchists in the past, and what they're trying to do here with this essay, which is called Jihadism, an Eerily Familiar Threat, is draw a connection between the history of anarchist attentat, attacks against state figures, and modern jihadism. Stratfor publishes a daily intelligence briefing since the mid-90s. Its rise to prominence occurred with the release of the Kosovo Crisis Center during the NATO airstrikes over Kosovo. And they also have a subscription service and daily reports. So I'm going to read a little bit from this essay written for Stratfor, but that pertains to anarchists. The author's name is Scott Stewart. He's referring to a book called Blood and Rage, A Cultural History of Terrorism. An excellent book by historian Michael Brulé that outlines the cultural history of terrorism. As I flipped the chapters on nihilist and anarchist terrorism in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, I couldn't help but notice some intriguing similarities to jihadism. This week, I'll share them with you to put the modern threat that jihadists pose into better context. Both anarchists and jihadists view themselves as a vanguard able to awake and mobilize their respective masses, the proletariat and the ummah, to destroy the current order and replace it with a utopian society. Moreover, both hold a strict dualistic view of the world. Whereas anarchists see a global society divided into proletariat and bourgeoisie, jihadists see it as true Muslims pitted against the rest of the world. And the hatred anarchists felt for the bourgeoisie is not unlike the loathing jihadists have for their apostate and non-Muslim enemies. Different degrees of success. During their heyday, anarchists managed to assassinate a number of world leaders. In addition to McKinley and Umberto, they killed Russian Tsar Alexander II, French President Sadi Carnot, Spanish Prime Minister Antonio Canivas, Empress Elizabeth of Austria, Portuguese King Carlos I and his son Crown Prince Luis Felipe, and Greek King George I. And those were just the attempts that succeeded. Jihadists share similar ambitions, but so far they have fallen short. The next story we're going to talk about is an editorial piece that was submitted anonymously called Left Unity is a Suicide Pact for an Anarchist Anti-Fascism. Clearly, 2017 is going to be the year of Antifa, both because of some of the splinter organizations that have come out of the quote-unquote alt-right, and because of that general attitude that the people in charge of the United States of America have inflicted upon us. We're going to be talking a lot about fascism, what is and is not fascism, and we're going to be talking a lot about what opposing fascists looks like. This article, of course, is focused specifically on the role of unity with the left. Here are some quotes. All of this isn't intended to deceive ourselves into thinking that the masses, whatever in the fuck that's supposed to mean, are on our side and don't know it yet, just to say that things are moving fast in drastic and terrifying directions, and the soil is uniquely ripe for the ideas and actions of those who have the enemies of authority, who are the enemies of authority from the word go, if we stick to our guns. And into that mix comes a monster called left unity. Left unity, at least as I've encountered it, seems to be code for authoritarian Marxists and anarchists must stick together, because we both hate liberals and are cool with shooting cops and fascists, or at least joking about it. I don't know how it plays out in anarcho hubs, where it seems anarchists can be as open as they can be about whatever the differences they have amongst themselves and still find plenty of people to build and or break with. But in most of the rest of the country and online, this relationship seems to be solidifying as the default. It's rare to find explicitly anarchist or anti-state organizations, and projects rather than a sea of anti-capitalist or radical left formations, where the Circle A and the Hammer and Sickle sit side by side or intertwined as just alternate options, heading in the same direction. The difference is more or less irrelevant in the face of a greater enemy. This seems especially true in anti-fascism. They go on. We can either fight a rising fascism as a force that believes that individuals know how to run their lives better than institutions, as sworn and weathered enemies of all oppression, or we can fight it with the fans of some of the greatest tyrants of all time, dulling everything about our message that actually appeals to people, to focus on the common ground of being sharing and laughing at jokes about dead cops. Catering our message to be compatible with Stalinists means we can no longer be taken seriously as out for liberation. And the final passage. All of the time spent building bridges to small handfuls of authoritarian leftists could be spent far more effectively finding comrades that don't believe that freedom is a bourgeois farce. There has been a growth of interest in state communism over the past few years, and perhaps some naive enough to think that it's not so bad will join us if we make our objection clear and do good work. But they're not going to if we delude ourselves and those we speak to into thinking anarchism and 100 years of bloodthirsty dictatorships have jack shit in common. Finally, I want to speak from a historical piece about Lawrence Labadie. Lawrence Labadie is the son of a guy named Joe Labadie, who is of interest to anarchists because the largest collection of anarchist archival material lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at the University of Michigan. Lawrence Labadie was his son, who just died in the 1970s. There's an interesting article here written by David D'Amato, who is an interesting cat himself. So here's a little bit about what he has to say about Lawrence Labadie. Lawrence Labadie was the last true exponent of 19th century Tuckerite anarchism. Lawrence was, by all accounts, a classic curmudgeon, quick to find fault and disinclined to suffer fools gladly. Marked by a deep and pronounced contempt for his fellow man, Labadie's political writings reflect his apparently lifelong feelings of depression and detachment. Aspects of Arthur Schopenhauer's thought seems to have penetrated Labadie's psyche rather deeply. Schopenhauer's work emphasizes the human will, its arbitrariness and irrationality, from which come Labadie's conclusion that individual lives and the projects attached thereto are pointless. Schopenhauer's The Word as Will and Representation brought to Labadie's attention the rather precarious position, in Schopenhauer's words, of being stranded on one of those numberless spheres freely floating in boundless space. Labadie wondered how human beings, products of a moldy film budding on one of these many planets, could have any significance at all, any cosmic importance. Labadie regularly returned to this, the nagging feeling that nothing matters, or could matter. When historian Paul Average interviewed him just months prior to his death, holed up in a disheveled stone house with only a stove for heat, Labadie referred to himself as a recluse and reiterated his lack of faith in the prospects for liberty and humanity. Despondent to the last, Labadie told Average that anarchism is a pipe dream, unattainable for a human animal that is, by Labadie's estimation, merely an animated, elementary canal, different from the worm only by the appendages which is developed in him. Labadie had always placed a high premium on solitude, owing to his misanthropic tendencies. He favorably paraphrased Schopenhauer, stating that only the man who is alone is really free. Even while he advanced common libertarian arguments about the need for and value of voluntary social organizations of various shapes and sizes, we can reconcile these ideas by understanding the importance of choice and independence, premised on the individual's right to own private property. In Labadie's thought, to be free means to be independent, not forced independence. Independence implies exclusion. Hence, a libertarian economy will involve property rights. Labadie characterized collectivists of all shades as immature and infantile, childish, unable to understand the necessity of free market exchange and private property to genuine economic freedom. The topic of the week. Every week on the Anarchist News website, we introduce a topic of the week, which usually is a conversation about some point that may or may not be disagreeable amongst anarchists, and usually different perspectives sort of have their say. The idea of the topic of the week is to sort of be an introduction to a theme, and then to hope that people rise to the occasion to discuss that theme. Of course, as with many things, especially internet-related, people have strong opinions, and sometimes the discussion veers wildly away from what we would call productivity. Anyways, in this section of our podcast, we're going to try to have two people talk about the theme, the topic of the week, and talk about our own perspectives. And so we begin this week with a conversation with our friend Ariel, and I'm going to allow Ariel to introduce themselves now.
Hello. I'm Ariel. I live here in the Bay Area, and I've been an anarchist for about 20 years of not any particular stripe, or I suppose non-sectarian, as the phrase may go.
So I guess the question is, for you, does anarchism mean struggle?
No. Well, first of all, I think it's more complicated than that. I think anarchy means a lot of things to me. And struggle is never one of the words that I would have used in, you know, say, a forward definition. Or picking the four traits that best describe what the politic is to me. I appreciate the sentiment behind anarchism being struggle. But I already felt like to live in this world in a way that I wanted to was a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Because isn't that... I mean, I guess there's a way that the simple answer is yes, anarchy does mean struggle because I live in a politic where I'm fundamentally opposed to all that is.
Sure.
And that creates a particular relationship to everyday life.
So the struggle of a person or the struggle of being in this world is a very different definition of struggle than I think is used in the popular imagination, where struggle sort of implies a struggle against the state or a struggle against capitalism. Struggle really looks like being in the streets, visibly struggling, perhaps with cameras nearby.
Well, I mean, I actually think that that's a fine definition. Mostly my confusion is about why anarchists think that they own that. People have been in the streets for hundreds of years.
Since there have been streets.
I was raised by a second wave feminist, and a huge part of that entire politic was about thousands of people showing up and being in the streets and being a show of force, and this is how we're going to tell you that. One of the ways we're going to demonstrate to you that women count.
Mm.
So it's not unique to our politics.
Mm. The by and large, the interesting, the conversation went wildly awry in the context of the Anarchist News thread. The most interesting comment, in my opinion, was by a person that identifies themselves with a long series of ankle back and forward slashes. We'll call them multi-slash. Anyways, I'm going to read a bit from it, and then we'll discuss it. It seems like the milieu will continue to divide down to the following lines in the coming years. The first group, anti-fa, social movements and struggle, communistic, vague, or masked authoritarian structures, language and aesthetic dictation, decree, totalization. Then the second group, anarch, individualist, liberty, freedom, spirituality, escape, self-sufficiency. This has already been going on for years, and perhaps it stretches back to the 1800s or even further. But to see the way groups have evolved in recent years, how this site has evolved, causes me to wonder if divides might deepen, and how the term anarchist will become used or disused. Thus, antifa and anarchs offer larger adoption both in their own right, detached from historical baggage, and free from the pejoratives and scapegoatings associated with the terms anarchist and anarchism, which might forever remain a battleground. I think that's an interesting proposition. I hate the either-or nature of it. I think that I if I were going to make the same point, I probably would use the word social anarchism versus antisocial anarchism. But I think that where they're going perhaps is, I think that this is an interesting point.
Well, clearly where he's going, where they're going, is to actually really emphasize and further this divide that they've created, I'm not sure that it's interesting. I'm not sure that it's all that different than what we've heard before. It's a spicier version of
activists.
Okay. I wasn't particularly that impressed with it. I mean, he evokes some nice images that historically we all like to grab onto.
Yeah, personally, I despise the term anarchs. It sort of comes out of the out of a Stirnerite sort of preconception of what anarchism is, and I just think it's horrible, terrible, and I don't think it escapes the confusion with anarch versus anarchy versus anarchism. You know, that's a sort of a pile of jargon that.
Yeah.
You know.
I did not find it more clarifying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, really, the idea is about struggle, and perhaps struggle is a term that can be owned by both groups in equal measure, because as you sort of already defined, if living in this world is a struggle, and indeed it is, and if trying to transform the world, of course, would also be a struggle, then perhaps both factions of this false dichotomy have access to the word, and maybe more pointedly, because struggle is such an open and broad term, it isn't necessarily special or maybe, in your words, interesting for anarchists to use the term.
I actually think this is a really good example of how we corner ourselves and get locked into a specific image about what it means to be anarchist and what we can do and who we can be. And the internet is full of riot porn and various pictures of what it is that struggle is supposed to look like. And if you're not doing that thing, then you're not doing struggle, then you're not doing the work that is anarchy. And my favorite thing about being an anarchist is that I get to decide, except that there's this huge portion of the politic that I don't have access to because it's already decided that it can only be this thing. And that makes me sad.
Sure. The most recent iteration of this, we'll call it the 2016 version, that is perhaps, there are already people that I miss that are absolutely part of this particular split where they basically have said that anarchy will equal struggle, and it probably also means some particular type of aversion to Trump and to an engagement with electoral politics in this sort of classic oppositional way. I already miss a whole bunch of people who have picked their side and have decided that that's where they want their energy to be spent.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you for the conversation, and I look forward to what we do in future episodes.
Thank you.
What is anarchism? We want to make sure that this podcast provides a variety of services. It both talks about anarchism and the anarchist community, the milieu, if you have it, or anarchy land, as a real existing place. There are things happening here. There is still something charming and amazing about anarchism. And we want to introduce people to it if they are on the outside of it, and we want to remind people about it if they're on the inside and they feel sometimes like it's a depressing or lonely or a place where losers live. So first we're going to do this by introducing people to a sister website to Anarchist News. It's called anarchy101.org. Anarchy101.org is a Q&A site where people sort of come and they embrace the fact that they may not know everything, and they ask basic and simple and ethical and moral questions to real live anarchists. A lot of people are engaged in this community, There's definitely a solid dozen people who are very connected. The question we're going to talk about, and we're going to read from it, is called, What Are the Main Threads of Anarchist Thinking? And the person that responded is a person I call Fake Aragorn. Their name is also Aragorn, as it so happens. We actually are in a group called the Confederacy of Aragorns. And they write, there are at least 57 types of anarchism. And they define them, here we go. Anarchist communism. Anarchist communism proposes that the freest form of social organization would be a society composed of self-managing communes with a collective use of the means of production, organized democratically and using consensus decision-making, and related to other communities through federations. In anarchist communism, there would be no money, but everyone would have free access to the resources and surpluses of the commune. Anarchist communism is said to operate on a gift economy. Collectivism. Collectivist anarchism is similar to anarchist communism, except for the fact that in collectivism, workers would be compensated for their work on the basis of the amount of time they contributed to production. Rather than goods being distributed according to need, as in anarcho-communism, some collectivist anarchists do not oppose the use of currency. Some support workers being paid on the amount of time they contributed to production. These salaries would be used to purchase commodities in a communal market. Anarcho-syndicalism. Syndicalism focuses on radical trade unions as a potential force for revolutionary social change, seeking to replace capitalism and the state with a new society that is democratically self-managed by the workers. Important principles of syndicalism include worker solidarity, direct action, such as general strikes and workplace recuperations, and worker self-management. Syndicalism is sometimes seen as simply a specific strategic focus within communist or collectivist anarchism, as opposed to a distinct type of anarchism in itself. Insurrectionary anarchism. On the other hand, insurrectionary anarchism opposes formal organizations such as labor unions and federations that are based on a political program and periodic congresses. Instead, insurrectionary anarchists support informal organization and small affinity groups based organization. Insurrectionary anarchists put value in attack, permanent class conflict, and a refusal to negotiate or compromise with class enemies. Contemporary insurrectionary anarchism most often inherits the views and tactics of anti-organizational anarcho-communism. Anarcho-feminism is a form of anarchism that synthesizes radical feminism and anarchism. Anarcho-feminism was inspired in the late 19th century by writings of early feminist anarchists such as Lucy Parsons, Emma Goldman, and Voltairine de Cleyre. Anarcho-feminists, like other radical feminists, criticize and advocate the abolition of traditional concepts of family, education, and gender roles, and believe that the feminist struggle against sexism and patriarchy is an essential component of the anarchist struggle. As Susan Brown put it, quote, as anarchism is a political philosophy that opposes all relationships of power, it is inherently feminist, end quote. Green anarchism, or eco-anarchism, is a school of thought within anarchism that puts emphasis on environmental issues. Green anarchists often criticize the main currents of anarchism for their focus in debates about politics and economics, instead of a focus on ecosystems. That's a strange definition. Anyways, moving on. Anarcho-primitivism. Anarcho-primitivism is an anarchist critique of the origins and progress of civilization. According to anarcho-primitivism, the shift from hunter-gatherer to agricultural subsistence gave rise to social stratification, coercion, and alienation. Anarcho-primitivists advocate a return to non-civilized ways of life through deindustrialization, abolition of the division of labor, abandonment of large-scale organizational technologies, and rewilding. There are other non-anarchist forms of primitivism, and not all primitivists point to the same phenomena as the source of modern civilized problems. Primitivism is seen as extreme by some anarchists, but it does provide a useful counterbalance to the cheerful industrial revolution optimism expressed by the late 19th and early 20th century anarchists like Kropotkin, that technology and technological progress are inherently liberatory and should be pursued by anarchists in a post-revolutionary society. Post-structuralist anarchism, post-anarchism. The prefix post does not mean after anarchism, but refers instead to the challenging and disruption of typically assumed assumptions within frameworks that emerged during the Enlightenment era. This means a basic rejection of some of the essentialist reductionist notions of traditional anarchism. It argues that capitalism and the state are not the only sources of domination in the time in which we live, and that new approaches need to be developed to combat the network-type structures of domination that characterize late modernity. And then, finally, Fake Aragorn says, synthesism, anarchy without adjectives, type 3 anarchism. This probably would also encompass what we call, in North America, post-left anarchism. Anyways, anarchism without adjectives is an attitude that tolerates the coexistence of different anarchist schools of thought. Anarchism without adjectives emphasizes harmony between various anarchist factions and attempts to unite them around their shared anti-authoritarian belief. Rudolf Rocker said that the different types of anarchism presented only different methods of economy, the practical possibilities of which have yet to be tested, and that the first objective is to secure the personal and social freedom of men, no matter upon which economics basis this is to be accomplished. It's important to note that a large number of self-defined anarchists might use more than one of these labels to describe themselves, depending on what they were doing or what kinds of group structures they find themselves operating in. Some anarchists prefer durable, structured groups where members commit to certain ideological and tactical principles. Others prefer more flexible, small-scale affinity groups that come and go as needed. Often, members of these latter groups express concerns about how formal organization can tend towards bureaucracy and the perpetuation of the life of the group for its own sake. This concludes episode 1 of the A-News podcast. For an introduction to anarchism, please go to anarchy101.org. If you would like books and other anarchist material, littleblackcart.com. Most all references made in this podcast are from the website anarchistnews.org. There you can find news and up-to-the-minute commentary from non-sectarian anarchists. If you'd like to find my podcast, you can find it at thebrilliant.org. My blog is at aragorn.anarchyplanet.org. And the email for this podcast is podcast@anarchistnews.org.